Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is Travis Loop, the host, and today I am joined by Paul O'Callaghan, the founder and CEO of Blue Tech Research. How are you doing today?
Great, thanks, Travis.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have you here. This is exciting stuff. You're over here in Atlanta from your home in Ireland to help us out with Water Environment Federation's mid-year meeting and talk about innovation and technology and all those fun concepts. So glad to find some time to talk with you here on the podcast.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here. I feel right at home. It's raining outside.
Rainy and gloomy, huh? All right. Well, could you start out by just telling our listeners about Blue Tech Research?
Sure. We're a water technology market intelligence firm, and we focus on analyzing the water sector, trying to anticipate what the drivers for change are, what major thematic shifts we're seeing in the sector over time, and then based on that to identify where are the opportunities for innovation? Where should people be looking to create solutions? Where can we find particular solutions to end user needs, be they corporate or utilities? And we work quite a lot with large water corporates and investors, entrepreneurs, and researchers.
How long have you been around?
We founded in 2011.
Okay.
So, although I've been in the sector for about 20 years, Blue Tech Research was founded in 2011.
Okay. And could you talk quickly about your relationship with the Water Environment Federation and your work with us?
Sure. We've had a great partnership with the Water Environment Federation, probably going on 6 years now. We held our first innovation pavilion with WEF and Imagine H2O at WEF Tech, and we do that every year. And we've expanded that to other innovation programming elements. We also currently have a visiting fellowship program with the Water Environment Federation, where one of our team is co-located, and that helps foster collaboration and sharing of information between the groups.
Okay. So what I wanted to start with you today is about this word innovation. I like to ask people about just the word innovation and what it means to them, because you hear it so much. And some people might say, oh, it's a buzzword and maybe it's overused. But what does innovation mean to you? And what does it mean for something to be truly innovative?
I think it either has to meet a need or it has to deliver its own value. I'd borrow something I heard Edward de Bono saying. He said that a door which opens up and not out, that's not innovation. That's just a different type of door.
Mm. You
know, unless there's some inherent advantage to what you're doing, it's just different.
Ah.
And being new for the sake of being new isn't innovation.
Okay. So it has to serve some different purpose or deliver some different end.
Either it has this a pain point there currently which is not being addressed, whether that's energy use, chemical use, perhaps an operational headache, that this new innovation fundamentally hits a pain point or maybe a bottleneck mm-hmm. in an existing technology. That's what we look for. What's holding something back and what could unlock that and let it go forward? Mm-hmm. That's one aspect we look for innovation. Secondly, might be some new or emerging crisis. It could be antibiotic-resistant bacteria or emerging contaminants, and something that can deal with that emerging issue or need.
Does something have to be disruptive to be innovative?
No. Quite a lot of what we see is, you know, sustaining innovation, where it makes something that's already there more efficient. Mm. And that's what we would call value-driven innovation at Blue Tech. So we classify things as value-driven, where they're an improvement to something that's there. Perhaps they lower the energy use. So no, they don't all have to be disruptive at all by any means. In fact, the biggest disruption potential we see in water is more at a systems level rather than at a technology level. That's where the disruption can really take place.
Okay. And what do you, could you elaborate on that a little bit? What you mean by innovation at the systems level?
Sure. Well, you know, our current water system is centralized, a use once approach to water, little enough energy recovery or resource recovery. Whereas what can disrupt that system is moving towards decentralized treatment, resource recovery, energy generation, maybe point of use treatment, zero liquid discharge, zero water factories. And those ideas and concepts, including, say, direct potable water reuse, they're innovations and changes in how we manage water, but can be enabled with existing technology.
So technology is another word here I want to talk to you about. You know, technology is increasingly a part of our world, a part of our daily lives, a part of every sector out there, healthcare or aviation, or you name it, and technology is there. What have you seen as far as where the water sector stands in harnessing the potential of technology and embracing it and advancing it, maybe compared to some of these other industries out there? What are your thoughts?
I often think that water is like an open economy. It's not a closed thing. It's anything that touches water, and we're not buffered or insulated from what's happening outside of water. So where you see major advances in biotechnology or IoT, digital, or advanced materials science, they often find ways of affecting water, whether materials science or nanotechnology could lead to a better membrane. You see that happening. Or advances in medical biotechnology, like metagenomics, is leading to us with a much better understanding of what's happening in our biological wastewater treatment plants. And digital is enabling us to be more efficient in operations. So these macro-level trends, they find their way into water as well.
That's a very interesting point and perspective, is how water is so integrated in everything else in our society. So those adoptions and that technology and innovation is kind of all woven together in a way. What about the rate of change right now that we're seeing in the water sector when it comes to adopting technology? How are we doing there? What will your thoughts be?
I think it's accelerating. And I think that we were in our meeting this morning, we were quoting Bill Gates, who said that when we think of what we can achieve in a year, we often overestimate how much change will happen in a year. But if you think of what you can achieve over 10 years, we tend to underestimate it. And 8 years ago, there was the first talk about energy from wastewater, energy neutrality. And now, 8 or 9 years on, you can point to 30 or 40 plants in the US alone that are energy neutral. Mm. So we are shifting and changing. And sometimes these things happen bit by bit, slowly, over a decade. But before you know it, you've kind of made a transition where, energy neutrality is the norm. Mm. We accept direct potable water reuse now, and we didn't before. And some of it's needs-driven, where somebody, you know, has to do it first of all. I'd be optimistic about the level of change.
That's very interesting. So patience might not be a strong suit for a lot of folks, or for us these days. It's a very fast-moving world, and you're used to quick results with things, right? You have to take a little bit of a longer time horizon, a longer view, a longer-term view when you're looking at the rate of change with technology and the water sector. Instead of being frustrated or thinking things aren't moving, realize that they actually are over these bigger arcs of time.
Yes. Yeah. It's not like a smartphone. Mm. But even the smartphone itself, that would have taken, you know, 2 or 3 years before everyone had transitioned from a Nokia handset to a smartphone. In water, it may take long. It will take longer. Mm-hmm. But it happens faster than you think. And before you know it, you know, that 10 years has elapsed, and things that we didn't think about are now mainstream. Mm. What's fringe today may be the mainstream in a decade.
Yeah. A lot of our listeners are in the U.S. We do have some international listeners. Hopefully you being one of our guests will increase that. But, you're based in Ireland, and you deal with these issues around the world. How would you compare what's happening with innovation and water tech in the U.S. with what you see in other parts of the world? Or is, you know, I know that the globe is shrinking all the time, right? What would you say is, you know, U.S. versus what's happening in Europe and Asia and Australia when it comes to kind of the technology and innovation?
Yeah, a few thoughts. I'd say, one, water is a local issue. You know, people perceive it as a global issue, but at its heart, it's a local issue. It has to be dealt with city by city, town by town, state by state. So you could take what's happening in California, Arizona, New Mexico, Florida, and water reuse, and that's cutting edge. You know, certainly even in-building reuse that's happening in San Francisco is certainly at the leading edge of innovation and thinking around water reuse. Then around the Great Lakes, their issue might be nutrient enrichment and affecting algal blooms. So they'll be moving quite forward in terms of dealing with that particular issue. We do see some policy differences between regions. So, for example, Europe is pushing really heavily circular economy as a theme. That is having an effect in Netherlands, Germany, Sweden, etc. This whole circular economy shift towards resource recovery, energy reuse, I would say Europe's probably a little bit further ahead there currently. That's also being adopted by corporate water end users like Pepsi-Cola, Coca-Cola, Nestle, Unilever. And then that tends to happen more globally across all of their sites, whether they're in Africa or Australia or elsewhere.
That circular economy, that was one of my next questions, if you will, is I wanted to, this is a term that's out there. Could you just explain that a little bit more when people hear that, what that means?
Yeah, sometimes the names that we use to describe things shift, although we might know it as a different thing before.
Yeah.
Smart water is now IoT. Energy and resource recovery is now circular economy.
Okay.
Circular economy, I think, was a way that companies in particular could embrace sustainability, but had the economic aspect to it and wasn't too purely environmental.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But at its heart, it's about doing things more efficiently, using less materials to begin with, the ability to recover those materials or reuse those materials. And of course, whether that's water or a raw material or the energy that goes into those processes, it ties together energy, waste, and water. The challenge in circular economy is how to balance all three. Reuse your water, but then deal with the waste. Reuse your water and deal with the waste, but don't use too much energy.
Mm.
Reduce your energy and so on.
Endless little loops there, right? I can see that. All right, I want to ask you about a couple other things that I heard you talk about in the session this morning. Was also this kind of the classic capital venture model of the success, fail, kind of just chug along rates that you see. Could you talk about that? What's the usual percentage breakdown of a new venture versus where you see it in the water sector, the analysis you did there?
Sure. We thought it would be really interesting to compare what a typical venture capital investor might like to see in their portfolio versus what BlueTech was able to analyze across the companies that we've been tracking for a number of years now. And a typical VC might expect that 20% of the companies they invest in will make it, they'll succeed, there'll be success stories. They expect maybe 20% will fail and go under, and about 60%, they won't be stellar home runs, but they'll be still around and doing okay. When we compared it to 85 companies over a 10 to 14 year period, we found the success rate was lower, and of course we define success here as the company was successfully acquired by a larger group in a non-distressed state, or it was doing more than $10 million in revenue a year.
Okay.
And about 12.5% of the data set succeeded. So 12.5% versus 20, it's a little bit more muted.
Mm-hmm.
20% failed, that was comparable, quite similar. And about 67.5% were still around. They hadn't managed a home run, but they hadn't gone under.
Mm-hmm.
So they tended to be able to exist, but perhaps not break through.
Mm.
Not those meteoric rises to success.
Yeah. And what's some of your thoughts on why that different percentage in water versus kind of the standard, you know, capital venture percentages?
Sometimes when you're looking at an individual company, the company itself may not succeed, but I think the technologies are succeeding. But oftentimes the first investor may invest, they may not have enough capital or patience, and 5 or 6 years later, that company disappears, and then somebody else picks up the baton and runs on, and they succeed later on.
Yeah.
So we do see that. There was a naivete around water tech, maybe 07, 08, 09, height of the clean tech boom. People were jumping in, maybe had misunderstandings about the nature of the space. There's a lot more reality coming to bear now. And going back to our definition of innovation, you either have to have a very clear value proposition and know why you're doing what you're doing, understand the market, the timelines, or be in the right place at the right time if some regulatory change comes in that creates a market for you. So part of it is, I think, been a learning process for smaller tech companies. Yeah, but also yeah. The larger tech companies also innovate themselves too. It's not just smaller companies.
Yeah, I think this is when you brought up the idea of trying to not be the first mouse, but you want to be the second mouse.
Sure. Well, then on top of that analysis, we layered in companies that we had selected to invite to our BlueTech Forum conference since 2010. And you know, we like to think that we've got a good eye for spotting promising technology trends. And we were pleased. About 27.5% of our companies had succeeded. So we were doing better than the industry average, about twice.
Yeah.
We were also doing better on our failure rate. We were higher on the failure rate. 37% were failing.
Huh.
Yeah. So we looked at that more closely and we said, I actually do remember seeing these companies are still around, or at least the technologies are still around. And we could see that in quite a few cases, a forward osmosis company, HTI, may have disappeared, but FTS H2O appeared. Max West was pushing gasification, but that was then picked up by PHG, or now Aries Clean Energy. And that led us to observe that it's often said that the early bird gets the worm, you know, get in there early at the start. But in water, we say it's often the tortoise, not the hare, that wins the race.
Mm.
You've got to be steady there. And the analogy is the second mouse gets the cheese.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be the first mouse who sets off the trap.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting. These are great analogies to use. I wanted to just touch on a few of the kind of key areas when it comes to resource recovery and just get your thoughts about kind of the current landscape. What's interesting. So, water reuse, just kind of what's going on in water reuse. I know there's a lot, it's a huge area, but what are your thoughts?
I think there's been a big increase in just general water reuse, non-potable water reuse. The amount of installed capacity has grown enormously over the past decade. Some of the low-hanging fruit in terms of the ability for to reuse non-potable water on irrigation of golf courses, sports grounds, things like that, cooling of nuclear power plants, so that's been exhausted. And then you find yourself in a situation where you're looking for other outlets which may require dual infrastructure, pumping water longer distances, and that's leading people to look much more closely at potable water reuse, whether that's direct or indirect potable water reuse. And the concept of one water is emerging in that it doesn't matter where it's from, it's all a source of water that can be used. And a few things are happening, I think. There's better data around water quality available now. We can now measure more accurately things in real time. As we do that, it gives consumers confidence in reuse quality water. The other side of that coin is it potentially raises concerns about quality of potable drinking water.
Mm.
But that narrows the gap between the perceptions around potable drinking water and reuse quality water. And good information can raise concerns about one, but give confidence in the other. So I think that we're likely to see increased acceptance of that. And reuse within a building level, that whole decentralized concept going right down to reuse in the building, that's something we see certainly, I would say, in California, Australia, Singapore, elsewhere.
All right. Another topic here is not just energy efficiency, but actual energy generation within the water sector. Thoughts on what's kind of the current state of play there?
A lot of the buzz was around the fact that there was energy in wastewater, that there was an awareness that you could harness it. Bioelectrochemical systems appeared, a lot of hype. They haven't quite made it through yet. A lot of talk about carbon diversion. That is making its way through a little bit more. But where the energy is at, it's really in the sludge and the biosolids. And the workhorse there is anaerobic digestion. And that is allowing many plants to make the leap to energy neutral, but usually by taking in some other form of organic waste, co-digestion, fat soils and grease. So in the future, you could see that wastewater operators could become organic waste processors, where they're big centralized facilities and they take in organic waste from the community. Mm-hmm. So shift there.
Any places that are kind of leading the way on that?
Well, there's some really high profile examples like Strass in Austria was one of the first plants to declare energy neutrality. Aalborg in Denmark. In the United States, East Bay Mud would be a really flagship example. But there are smaller examples that are maybe less high profile around the US, like Fond du Lac, others which are using metagenomics and biotech to enhance their digesters, to increase biogas and take in wastes.
Yeah. That's fascinating stuff. It's incredible. Wow.
It's kind of like a velvet revolution, I'd say, happening in water.
Yeah. And then kind of nutrient recovery. That's kind of when you look at the new water concept, NEW, that's the other pillar there. What's going on with nutrient recovery?
Again, it ties into circular economy. And of course, once you start reusing the water and, you know, recovering your energy, then you begin to look at nutrients. Increasingly, they have to be removed to meet nutrient discharge consents. And can you create value in doing that? We certainly demonstrated that it is now technically possible. Like, again, 10 years ago, talking about how much change happens in 10 years. Hmm. 2007, there were maybe one or two struvite generation plants operational in all of North America.
Hmm.
Now there are maybe two dozen.
Hmm.
So that trend has definitely proven that it's technologically possible. How far it's going to be able to go economically is yet to be seen, I think.
Mm.
When we think about circular, we've been thinking about the space station as the ultimate example of a circular economy.
Ah, yeah. That I'm very interested in space and space travel and that whole thing. So that's a very fascinating example. It's amazing that they've been doing this type of thing, right, with water reuse on the space station, and those pretty intelligent astronauts are good with it. So it should be good for the commoners down here on ground, right? Last thing I want to talk about is storytelling. You know, you've talked a lot about innovation and technology, and that there are all these exciting things happening, and there's all this potential. But part of maybe advancing all of it is getting the story out there. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've been involved in Partnering for Impact, an initiative that Water Environment Federation was pioneering, and I became involved in a storytelling committee at how the water sector as a group, how we as an industry could do a better job of articulating our own story and the successes that are out there. And too many of the stories that are told about water are quite doom and gloom. Negative stories about how wars will be fought about water, it's the next oil. Whereas actually, some of what we've been talking about here today, they're great examples and reasons to be optimistic. And I think that if you can tell those stories, people are hardwired to connect with stories. Humans are for thousands of years. And if we believe and engage in that, and particularly the public, if you get the public on board, capture their imagination, that becomes easier for policymakers and politicians. Then it becomes easier for utility managers. And we're working in that concept and how we can tell those positive stories and hopefully have an impact through that.
Yeah. And I loved how earlier you pointed out to me that the Irish are great storytellers. So you're a good person to kind of be in the leading this effort.
Thanks. Yeah, we do like to tell stories.
That's true. Well, great. Well, Paul, I really appreciate your time. I've been looking forward to talking to you for a while, and thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks very much. Pleasure. Thanks, Travis.
Words on